like ours does. And on the front of the engine, you'll notice that this has an open front end because the importer put a dress kit on the engine, so it would be pretty when you look in there. On the straight 52s and on all the others, they have what we call louvers. These were meant to run in Siberia. So with the louvers, they can seal up the entire engine, not just the back end of it. The open area behind the cowling is called the gills. And on airplanes with louvers, the gills are wide open. On airplanes that have an open front end with the dress kit on the engine, they have shutters or they have cowl flaps. So you can tell some of the differences outwardly if you can see it. With the TW, we have 70 gallons of gas at about 14 gallons an hour. I consider each tank to be 1 hour of flying, and then after that, it's time to land. So you fill those two tanks up, you empty the one in your body, and you're ready to go fly again. Notice the lightning bolt on the side of the airplane. In World War I, or right at the start of World War I, Russia needed airplanes. So they petitioned the Allies to send them as many airplanes as soon as they could, and the first country to respond was France. France sent their first escadrille of Newport 17s over to Russia, and the squadron insignia was a lightning bolt. When the Russians saw those airplanes arrive in Mother Russia, the Russian pilots, oh my goodness, this is good Russian good luck symbol. So the French escadrille lightning bolt became the insignia or the good luck symbol for the entire Russian Air Force. And if you think of pictures of Russian airplanes from World War I through about 1963, mid-60s, you'll notice almost all of them have a lightning bolt on the side of the airplane. That's because it's a Russian good luck symbol. The paint job on my airplane, my wife and I spent about 6 months working on. And being a fighter pilot who flew gray airplanes, I wanted a gray airplane. My wife likes color. She wanted a red airplane. So after working for 6 months, that's what we got. But the basic camouflage scheme is off of a Focke-Wulf 190, and that's the beauty of our airplanes. You can do whatever you want with them to produce a paint job. The pilot who had this paint job, his name was Major Hermann Graf. He was one of the high-scoring Luftwaffe aces on the Eastern Front, and he did survive the war. He started out in ME-109s, and he had a very different pedal symbol on the cowling, but he did have that, and he slowly evolved it until this model. This is his 1944 Focke-Wulf 190 paint scheme, winter camouflage. He had the red pennants on the front. He had the pennants on the rudder. And in 1944, things weren't going so well on the Eastern Front for the Germans. So he figured he needed all the good luck he could get. Well, guess what he did? He put the Russian good luck symbol on the side of his airplane just like this. The Romanian star that you see, they used from 1945 to 1950. I wanted to be unique again and have something that it wasn't a straight red star. So for those 5 years after World War II, the Romanians were able to be halfway between Russia and halfway between the Western powers. And in 1950, the Russians told them, no more Western red star. So after that, the Romanians had to go to an all red star. But in honor of their 5 years in an attempt to stay out of the Iron Curtain, I put those stars on my airplane. I'm going to hand the microphone over to Bill right now. He's going to talk about his L-29. We will be open for questions afterwards. And as we come up with other little periodic cool things about the engines, we'll go ahead and point them out to you. Oh, one more thing before you talk. I forgot to mention this. Our engine turns backwards. So instead of a right-turning prop from the cockpit, we have a left-turning prop from the cockpit, which means on takeoff, we have to step on the left rudder instead of the right rudder. The good news is you don't have to think about that. You just got to look at where the nose is going and step on the rudder. That'll keep it going straight down the runway. The reason the Russians did that is these engines use the same valve arrangement as American Wright's engines did. And the Russians found out they could grind one less cam or lobe on the cams because of that valve arrangement if they turned the engine backwards. So that's why these engines turned backwards. So another unique feature about the airplane is the backwards turning prop. Bill. Let's hear about the L39.
I know what you mean. Hi, my name is Bill Culberson. I've been a member of the Red Star Pilots Association for about 5 years now. And my airplane here today is the Aero Vodahody L29 Delphin, which in Czechoslovakian means dolphin. The NATO name for it was the Maya. The airplane is basically the U.S. equivalent of the T-33 and sort of the T-37 as well. The Russians discovered in the 50s, as they had the MiG-15, the MiG-17 going, and some of their other first-generation jets, that the transition from a prop trainer to a swept-wing jet was too abrupt for the peasants. And as such, they were losing a lot of people, especially in the remote air forces like in Vietnam. The Russians put out a specification for a new design that was won by the Czechoslovakian manufacturing organization, Aero Vodahody, which built all sorts of other airplanes, including the various Yak designs during the and other fighter designs during World War II. They came up with this concept themselves of what they thought a jet trainer ought to look like. The idea being for this trainer is that it's a straight wing design. It has a full flying set of flaps on it, so it's not like the Yaks where it's a drag device. This truly is providing greater lift and greater control. And they wanted an airplane that the pilot really could fly it out of the box with very little instruction and actually fly. The plane was a very successful design. Like everything Russian, it's built very robust. In a lot of cases, when I look at it, it's really almost over-designed. The landing gear is the trailing link landing gear, so that absorbs a lot of shock and damage when you're landing. The wheels are larger. They're designed to operate off of grass. And in fact, it operates better off of grass because it doesn't wear the tires out. As I mentioned before, the flaps are flying, so the airplane will take off and land in very small fields. The book says it'll fly out of 2,000-foot runways. I've flown them out of about 3,000-foot runways. But if you had a 2,000-foot grass strip with no obstructions on either end, should be able to get in and out no problem. The maintenance on the airplane is very, very light, and I think that owes a little bit to the way the Russians thought about their methodology for airplanes. They knew their airplanes were going to live outside. They knew that the guys working on the airplanes were probably, aren't going to be the greatest A&P mechanics in the world. So they created strong airplanes that were easy to work on and easy to get parts for. Case in point for parts, airspeed indicators, attitude indicators, all the primary instruments we think about. If you look at a MiG-17, an L-29, Yak-52s, and other things, you'll see a lot of the instruments are the exact same instrument. Russians like that for commonality, so that when they got a new Warsaw Pact nation in, they sent them an air force full of these things, and they just sent them a group of parts because so many of the parts were common. The L-29 has a really, really good service record from an accident standpoint. They just don't break. Most of the accident record in the United States reflects the same thing. To my knowledge, only one of them has been lost due to mechanical failures. The rest of them have been either fuel-related, not taking care of the fuel when you're putting it in, or flying mistakes like other people have made. In the configuration it's in right now, you'll see the external tanks underneath. The external tanks, and again, you got to remember the mission of the airplane. The mission of the airplane was to train people to fly the MiG-17, MiG-15, MiG-17, and the MiG-21. To the point that the control knobs and buttons and methodology for flying the airplane are in this airplane in the same place. What the Russians wanted you to do was fly this airplane, get about 160, 180 hours, transition to the MiG-15, and now you didn't have to think about the buttons, the bells, the whistles, and all that kind of stuff. It was all in the same place. All you had to do was get in the airplane and learn how to fly a swept wing jet. So it gave the budding Soviet pilot a real step up in going from a straight wing jet to his first swept wing jet. So the tanks are on there, but they really aren't very big. They're 40 gallons apiece. There's arguments in the L-29 community as to whether they actually do any good, because by the time you get to altitude, they're empty, and then they're just drag. So You know, some guys will say, well, if you follow your fuel curves and with less drag, you'll go the same range, which is about 400 miles. My personal experience is the tanks get you about another 25 or 30 miles further down the road. And that kind of comes to the next question. The L29 is, it's a great plane to fly. The acquisition cost is very cheap. You can find them right now from anywhere from $25,000 to $40,000. They have no maintenance issues. My annual cost me somewhere, condition inspection, not an annual, cost me somewhere between $500 and $1,000 a year. It's normally just oil and filters and stuff like that. The plane has few filters, I kid you not, three of them, this big around, this tall. I mean, they designed it so that if it was operating in the mud and off of grass, that the and by a mechanic who may not clean all his tools or oil that may get something in it, the airplane wouldn't run into problems. So you end up taking perfectly clean oil out, you put perfectly clean oil back in it, you take perfectly clean hydraulic fluid out, you put it right back in. Like most of the Soviet airplanes, the Russians have a love of air systems. This particular airplane is very similar to the Yak-52 and the Nachang CJ-6, which we don't have one here, but they all like pneumatic systems. This one has the same crazy, what looks like a bicycle brake on the top of the stick that you pull that activates the brake. And then depending on which way you've pushed the pedals, that determines which brake on which side of the airplane goes. You always tell new Soviet pilots, because they're always going on the runway doing this, going back and forth and back and forth until they finally figure out how to interpret the brakes. The brakes are actually really good. Matter of fact, if you activate the brakes on landing and you're not under 70 knots, the tires will just stop. And you won't flat spot them. You'll go all the way through them. So just let all the air out. So you got to be kind of careful with them. What else about this airplane? So performance. It's a plane that flies VNE, 443 knots, cruises about 230 knots. And this is the real kicker about this airplane. At cruise at 230 knots at 18,000 feet, it's burning in the neighborhood 160 gallons an hour. So that's the real drawback to the military jets. MiG-21 burns 450 and up, depending on how you're flying and what you're doing. MiG-17, 15 are in the 300 gallons an hour. So from a jet's perspective, it's very economical. It is a 2,000-pound thrust M701 Walther's turbine that produces, like I said, 2,000 pounds of thrust on a 7,000-pound airframe that's full of fuel, two pilots, and that's still getting off the runway in about 2,200 feet. It's a little slow on takeoff. It's a little sluggish until it pushes through 150 knots. But once it gets moving and gets over the 150-knot range and or you get to altitude, it actually turns into a very, very docile and yet very aerobatic airplane. You can see where the wings are placed. They're right on the center line of the fuselage. There's almost no dihedral in them. The T-tail configuration, really, its true purpose in life was to give the Soviets a feel, because their MiG-15 and MiG-17 were almost a T-tail and would have the same kind of features while inverted doing aerobatic flight. So it turned into a very, very simple, very robust, very easy to work on and operate and train in airplane. They became so good that many of the Warsaw Pact nations stopped flying prop airplanes like the 52 or the Yak-18 or, you know, the CJ-6 or any of those, because you could start in an L-29 and go straight to a jet, and that saved them some time and some cost.